We're continuing the special classes for Janmashtami, leading up to Janmashtami. We have a verse here from the Vishnu Purana, quoted in the Madhya Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Translation: let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Lord Krishna, who is the worshipable deity for all Brahminical men, who is the well-wisher of cows and brahmanas, and who is always benefiting the whole world. I offer my repeated obeisances to the personality of Godhead, known as Krishna and Govinda. Jai. Hare Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is a quotation from the Vishnu Purana 1965. I'm not sure if that's Canto 1 or whatever. Chapter 1965. Let's try and remember that. 1965. You've got that? Okay. I was wondering where that verse comes from, because we chant it so many times, but it's actually from the Vishnu Purana. If we can remember the year 1965, then we've got it. 1965. Good. If nothing else, we've learnt a reference. This is a very short purport. As I said, this is a quotation from the Vishnu Purana, 1965. I'm therefore going to read another verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 4, Verse 41. Vipra gavasi chavedas cha tapak satcham damakshamaha shraddha dayatatikshas cha krata vascha haras tanuhu. The translation of this verse is, by the way, what time do we finish? Is it 8:30? 8:30, okay. I'll leave some time for questions. Translation: the Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu. And they are the paraphernalia for a godly civilization. Let me repeat that again. The Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu, and they are the paraphernalia for a godly civilization. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When we offer our obeisances to the personality of Godhead, we say, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha, Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. When Krishna comes to establish real perfection in the social order, he personally gives protection to the cows and the Brahmins. Go Brahman Hitaya Cha. This is his first interest, because without protection of the brahmanas and the cows, there can be no human civilization and no question of happy, peaceful life. Asuras, therefore, are always interested in killing the brahmins and the cows. Interesting statement, isn't it? I think there's some instances in where there have been certain purges, such as in the USSR. It was dangerous to wear spectacles. Those of you who are wearing spectacles, watch out. Because often they were associated with those who used to read and have knowledge. The Brahmins. And they were afraid that people would become independently thoughtful and somehow or other question the ideologies in those particular totalitarian regimes. So watch out, those of you. I see we've got quite a few intelligent people here. especially in this age, Kali Yuga, cows are being killed all over the world. And as soon as there is a movement to establish Brahminical civilization, people in general rebel. Thus they regard the Krishna consciousness movement as a form of brainwashing. How can such envious persons be happy in their godless civilization? The Supreme Personality of Godhead punishes them by keeping them in darkness, birth after birth, and pushing them lower and lower into wretched conditions of hellish life. The Krishna consciousness movement has started a Brahminical civilization, but especially when it is introduced in the Western countries, the Asuras try to impede it in many ways. Nonetheless, we must push forward this movement tolerantly for the benefit of human society. I chose this verse from the Vishnu Purana, or perhaps the verse chose me, I'm not sure. since it is relevant to two forthcoming appearance days, or birthdays if you like, namely the appearance of Lord Krishna, Govinda, and Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of ISKCON. So classes are actually a lead up to Janmashtami and of course to Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. As far as I can understand, it's the 121st birthday of Srila Prabhupada, and for Lord Krishna, the figure I've got is 5,235. That's a lot of candles. Some initial observations on this verse. There are 4 points in this verse. Number one, those who are Brahmins worship Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu. Namo Brahmanya Devaya. The worshipful object of the Brahmins is Krishna. Second, that Lord Krishna is the benefactor of the cows. By the way, that includes bulls and oxen. We often use the term cows. I guess we don't want to use the word cattle because it's rather pejorative term. But cows and bulls. Number three, Krishna is the benefactor and well-wisher of the Brahmins. And number four, Lord Krishna is the benefactor and well-wisher of the entire world, Jagatitaya Krishnaya. Just make a few observations here. First point, those who are Brahmins and Vaishnavas, and Srila Prabhupada often groups the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas together because the Vaishnavas are higher than the Brahmins, although we could discuss that at some point. They engage in the worship of Lord Krishna, and in this age, of course, that is through the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, largely, and our own sadhana, our own transformational practices. Points 2 to 4. Although it says that Lord Krishna is the benefactor of everyone, Jigat Hitaya, and he's also, of course, Suridam Sarva Bhutanam. He's the friend of all living entities. He's particularly interested. He's particularly the benefactors of the cows and the Brahmins. So there's some distinction here given. Another point I'll mention. actually it's interesting because in one sense, we're interested in protecting all the animals. Srila Prabhupada, however, makes it very, very clear that cows should be given special protection. In one purport, he says, there is no suggestion in the Shastra for a pig protection program. I think some years ago we had a pig here, actually, and some of us were joking, we've got a pig protection program. But Srila Prabhupada makes it clear that the cow is especially important. We'll come to that later. Now, it's interesting that actually a lot of good qualities have been mentioned in this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam that we just read. The qualities, what were those qualities? Tapak, austerity, satcham, truthfulness, control of the senses, dhammaha, samaha, control of the mind, shraddha, faith, daya, mercy, titiksha, tolerance, sacrifice, and so on. But there's some allusion here that actually not only in order to develop peace and good qualities, not only must there be sadhana, chanting of Hare Krishna, but there is a kind of social dimension to our spiritual life. In other words, without a brahminical culture, our attempts to spread Krishna consciousness and our attempts to be Krishna conscious will be somewhat hampered. We need a brahminical culture. So I'd like to discuss this verse. Particularly what I'd like to do is discuss it in relationship to the Triguna and some misunderstandings about the Triguna, and also how this notion of Triguna is relevant to both outreach and to our own spiritual development. I'm going to give some attention to social, moral, cultural and community development. We often stress the moral and spiritual efficacy of our own sadhana. We think that actually good qualities come through the chanting of Hare Krishna, and that indeed is true. However, I'd like to actually look at some issues to do with social and community development in ISKCON and whether these are or are not relevant to us. I'm going to recognize actually there's a bit of a danger. I remember some years ago I was rather critical of the established church because I was thinking they always deal with social issues. And I was thinking, where is their spirituality? I thought it was somewhat lacking. However, over the years, I've actually come to perceive, rightly or wrongly, that we need to address some social issues. We need to look at not only the chanting of Hare Krishna, but our lifestyle choices, how we develop community, the effect that community has on our own spiritual development. So I'm going to focus on that a little bit. I'm also going to look a little at the idea of moral development as well as spiritual development, because this is important. And we've discussed this before, and I'm trying to continue some of the discussions we've had previously on the connection between spirituality and moral development, with the idea that actually we should not give up moral development. We should, and I'll come to that a little later. So there are some dangers. In the modern world, there's a lot of attention given to what is called social justice. But there's often a culture of blame. People are blaming others. Particularly, we're very fond of blaming leaders, aren't we? Isn't that a general pastime? That we elect someone, and then we blame them. Yeah. And then we elect someone else. And they don't satisfy us. So there's a lot of blame going on. So we need to be careful of that and take responsibility. But I'd like to discuss a little bit the idea of morality and social development, because this verse alludes to it. Actually, our shastras are full of discussions of social issues, and particularly the whole topic of varnashram. I was reading a lot of last night, the first canto of the, I think, chapter 17, how Parikshit Maharaj receives the age of Kali. Very, very interesting. There is so much discussion of social issues and the need for a Krishna-conscious society. And here, of course, this verse is focusing on the need for a brahminical society. And what do we mean by a brahminical society? Well, I'm going to discuss a little bit outreach here, because this is problematic. Let me go on. Cows, for example, right? Cows and Brahmins. In India, some states have recently banned cow slaughter. you may be aware. And I think the consumption of beef, am I right, in some states, is that also illegal? Or is it just the slaughter? Obviously, I'm not sure. Does anyone keep up with the news? Say that again, I didn't put it.
The sale of cattle for agriculture,
yeah.
It can't be used for slaughter.
Oh, okay, so when there's sale of cattle, it's prohibited, yeah. Some very interesting discussions. But look at the responses that are going on. I'll explore these. A lot of them have revolved around freedom of dietary choice. In other words, it's good for us to know what the moral climate is out there. So the whole idea is we should be allowed to eat what we like. And actually, it's very interesting, this whole idea of choice is very, very high on the kind of moral agenda at the moment. Yeah, particularly now we should be able to choose our gender. And even there's some are advocating that young children, even at 7 or 8, should be able to consider, you know, which gender I'd like to choose. Of course, we're not into... We do not support discrimination on the basis of the body or sexuality. However, I think there are some concerns about this flexibility that is there. So there's a lot of emphasis put on choice. So if we listen to moral arguments in the outside world, and we should be, I think it's useful for us to be aware of these, because we perhaps need to understand the context in which we're preaching. What are people's moral views? I came across one news article on the BBC, and this is on the 2nd of June, 2017. Let me read it to you. Is India's ban on cattle slaughter food fascism? So they've called it food fascism. Of course, these days, if you want to make a derogatory remark about someone or criticize their ideology, you call them fascists. Yes, Vishwambara Prabhu? Or Nazis, yeah? Didn't the Nazis study the Vedas? So, you know, that idea, if you can identify someone with Nazism, then National Socialism it was called, then actually immediately they're dismissed. We don't do the same for Marxism. I'm not quite sure why not, but anyway. We can consider some of these. And then there was of course, you know, if we start to look at what the fascists did in terms of their concentration camps, then we can actually, and some have made this comparison, we can compare them to the slaughterhouses. There seems to be some similarities, although the Jewish community has been rather... vehement in its opposition to making such a comparison because they think it's diminishing what happened to them as human beings. And certainly that is not the intention that we as devotees have in making such a comparison. We're not in any way diminishing the suffering of the Jewish people in the Holocaust, but what we are saying is, can we also consider, please, the plight of the animals in similar situations. And there was on this article, there was a photograph of a gentleman holding a placard saying, don't, the English is not quite right, as sometimes happens in India, don't attack on citizens' right to eat. So again, the right to eat what we want. These are some of the challenges. Of course, the other challenge we have is that... is the appropriation by the English language or the English civilization of the term sacred cow. And that's rather regrettable that it's entered as an idiom in the English language. The meaning is, I got this from the dictionary on the internet, a person, institution, custom, etc., unreasonably held to be beyond criticism. So there are certain sacred cows we have, something you can't criticize. Some years ago, we did a book on book. Wrote a book course on book distribution, but Some devotees objected to the fact that we were beginning to be analytical about book distribution and how we perform it. And in a sense, you could say that it had become a little bit of a sacred cow. In other words, we weren't allowed even to ask not whether book distribution is important, but how we perform it. It becomes such a sacred cow. Some were objecting to those who wrote the course, asking, should we be honest on book distribution, for example. So there was some concept that even in our own tradition, certain ideas can become sacred cows. But the point is, it's unfortunate. See the climate we're in if we want to propagate cow protection and a Brahminical culture. It's very difficult with the current contemporary moral climate. What about Brahmins? Think about it. What's the general approach to Brahmins? It's generally associated with caste exploitation. And we live in a world where the word hierarchy is also a what we call snarl word. A snarl word means something which is derogatory. Therefore, if there's a discussion on morality, people say something about hierarchy. It's automatically assumed to be morally repugnant, hierarchy. And of course, there's a whole emphasis these days on equality, which in some ways is beneficial for us with our notions of spiritual equality. Regrettably, the idea of equality is rather vague at the moment, and there's a confusion between moral equality and even biological equality. Therefore, there are some who are actually claiming that our sexual identity is completely socially engineered. There are not innate qualities such as male and female, but they're completely socially engineered. One lady was going on the warpath. She had a crusade against what she considered the moral repugnance of giving baby boys blue clothes and baby girls pink clothes. This is what it's come to. It's interesting to see the notions of equality where we've confused moral equality, or the right, you know, the fact that actually we should all be treated with respect, with physical equality, as if we should make everyone equal biologically. It's a very difficult situation. There was one famous rock star. I won't mention his name, but he was actually he was very big in the rock and roll world. And when he passed away, one of his colleagues gave a eulogy about how he broke down barriers. And this seems to be a real popular cause, moral cause, breaking down barriers. I mean, it's connected, for example, with the proposed wall in Mexico and so on, that Donald Trump proposed to keep out the Mexicans from the USA. But the same rock star was actually accused of sexual abuse, breaking down barriers. Why this breaking down barriers? We need barriers. We need our individuality. So when it comes to actually propounding or advertising a Brahminical culture, it's extremely difficult. The climate, the moral climate, the moral mores, the moral standards that are held both by the academics and in the popular world, in the media, for example, make it rather difficult. And we need to actually, therefore, be aware of these. So the kind of these two pillars of morality, the cow and the Brahmin, are really, not given a lot of respect. For example, if you look at the portrayal of the Hindu tradition, or what we might call the Vedic tradition, then it's often presented in school textbooks also as there's two main subjects that will always be there, namely cows and caste. And referring to the first line of this verse, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, idolatry. So it's rather difficult. What I'm going to suggest is what might be needed if we're to make an impact on moral discourse, if we really want to get in there and give some advice, not only on spirituality, but also on morality. And Srila Prabhupada alludes to this a lot, actually, the need for morality. In the 17th chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam, the bull is considered to be the representative of morality. Of course, that's dharma also, but morality. And the cow represents Mother Earth. There's a whole conversation in the 17th chapter of the first canto between the cow representing Mother Earth and the bull representing, who represents the principles of morality, Srila Prabhupada writes. Very interesting chapter, by the way. It's worth reading. What is needed might be a model of morality that's suitable. That is suitable to a range of moral and cultural contexts, and especially we need to be in ISKCON. It's difficult if we're associated with other religions that we may often consider to be Kaitava Dharma. I think there's a lot of quite understandable disquiet with religion these days because of what religion has done. Not what religion has done, what religious leaders have done. There's a lot of disquiet. And therefore, secularism, atheism are very, very prominent these days. We should be very careful, I'd suggest, about identifying ourselves with these other faiths or religions. We need something which actually goes beyond those. I'm going to suggest that there is a framework that we can use. And that is indicated by this verse, because the Brahmins and the cows are both emblems of the mode of goodness. The cow represents the mode of goodness amongst the animals. And of course, according to our tradition, prior to a human birth, you can either be a monkey, a lion, or a cow. And if one is a monkey, one is born in the mode of ignorance. If one is a lion, then one is born in the mode of passion. And if one is a cow, one becomes a human being whose predominant mode is goodness. And amongst the human beings, the Brahmin is the emblem of goodness. As far as morality is concerned, goodness is desirable. Here, according to this verse, it includes the adoration of Lord Krishna. Passion is sometimes acceptable if modified by sattva. I'm going to mention something. Very often we actually dismiss all the three modes, yeah? What have we got to do with the three? Mam cha yo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samatitaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. The ideal is to rise above the three modes. The Vaishnava is above the three modes. But do we consider ourselves Vaishnavas? That is the question. Generally speaking, a Vaishnava doesn't think I'm a Vaishnava. There is little scriptural endorsement for thinking that we are above the three modes of material nature. Hence, we might engage with them a little more critically, deliberately, both in our outreach and for our own spiritual life. That's what I'm suggesting. I mean, let's return to the verse. Krishna here doesn't say Indian cows or Indian Brahmins. No, he says cows. And not those, what do they call the cows with the big horns? There's a name for them. Anyway, for those special cows. It doesn't say just those cows. These we don't protect. No, cows. So there is a notion that actually the cultural aspects of our Krishna consciousness should be determined largely by the Triguna. Now, there's some difficult issues here as to what is Indian dress and what dress should we wear. And there's been huge debates, lengthy debates on websites like Dandavats about dress. I'm not going to suggest that we dismiss entirely some of the Indian or Vedic or what we might call Vedic trappings we have, but I'm going to suggest that actually we do need to put attention to sattva. Srila Prabhupada, after all, if we actually adopted an English vegetarian diet, I don't think we'd be doing too well. Right? You meet many people on Sankirtan. I can't become a vegetarian. I don't like salad. I can't become a vegetarian. I don't like nuts. Yes? You've had experience, book distributors? So there may be some of the particularities of our tradition we need to adopt. And yet, for outreach and also for our own community development, we may actually consider the Triguna as an interesting model. I'm going to finish in a minute. I've just got a few ideas here about the Triguna. It's a very useful model. It works. Some teachers in some of our Avanti schools have found that those who don't come from a Hindu background can quite readily come to grips and be excited about the concept of the Triguna, especially when they're asked to analyze themselves. Which mode are you in? They quickly come to understand that when it's about sustenance, it's goodness. When it's about creation, it's passion. And when it's destructive, there must be ignorance. It is not something where it's not a model where one necessarily has to have that spiritual commitment or a particular religious context. And therefore, it's very useful. I'm actually going to say a few things for our own benefit. We should not neglect to understand the modes. If someone wants to do some research, would you please count the number of verses in the Bhagavad Gita that makes a reference to the Triguna? Anyone like to do that? Any volunteers? Yes, Prabhu. Ryan. Okay, will you do that? That's great. We'll get a figure on the number of verses related to the Gunas. Second point, we should not prematurely consider ourselves transcendental. Three, we need to go beyond the specific verses that are there in the Gita to see how we apply the Triguna to other areas of life. You know, we've got the determination, the knowledge, so, the food, all the different verses. But what about, for example, how is the food served? What's the environment? What's the prasadam room like? How do we eat and respect prasadam? Yeah. Some devotees are very concerned. We eat with our hands and not with knives and forks. But I've seen some devotees eat very respectfully and with decorum, with knives and forks, and others are rather noisy in eating with the hands. I'm posing some questions. Can we analyze our driving according to the Triguna? Number four, we might be careful to differentiate rajas from tamas. Sometimes we lump them together, rajas and tamas. And there are verses like that as well, but they are distinct. And we have to deal with rajas. If you read the final part of the third chapter of the Gita, it's that lust that we have to deal with. That's one of the primary challenges we have of devotees. Rajagun, how do we deal with that? Rajagun is actually, if actually someone's not in tamas, Rajagun is actually quite powerful relatively in Kali Yuga. It builds empires. It creates. It's creative. It's associated with royalty. Palaces, red velvet, gold. That's the kind of environment you'll be eating in Rajagun. 5, do we really understand sattva? Sattva is not boiled vegetables, coming back to the idea of the English diet. Sattva is full of vigor. It gives joy. It gives happiness. It gives energy. Tasteless food is tamas. It's just balanced, just perfectly. Sattva. We should consider, what is sattva? What is rajas? What is tamas? Carefully analyze them. I think in the Srila Prabhupada said, if you understand this 14th chapter, you'll become self-realized. Yeah? You'll know perfection. I'm going to finish there because we've run out of time. I'd like some questions, please, or some comments.